Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Tonight is November the 24th. November 24th. And we are in Sefer Daniel. We are beginning Perek Gimel, the third chapter. Now, Perek Gimel has one of the two most famous stories, actually maybe one of the three most famous stories in Sefer Daniel. Sefer Daniel has really three very well-known stories in it. The most well-known story of Sefer Daniel is the one with Daniel and the lions. And we'll get to that. That's not going to be for quite a while. That comes later on in the Sefer. The other two stories that are well-known from Sefer Daniel is the handwriting on the wall, which is also coming up later. And the one from this parak, not everybody knows that it's in Sefer Daniel, but it's the story of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, who refuse to bow to the idol and get thrown into the furnace. That story is what Perek Gimel is all about, and that's what we're about to learn tonight. Now, there's a lot of misconceptions about that story, which we're going to have to dispel as we go along, and the psukim themselves, the verses themselves, will show us that it's not what a lot of people think this story was. So we have to read through as we go. As we did with Perek Beis, we're going to have to read a lot of psukim in order to get our bearings and then discuss it further. So this might end up taking, I'm certain that it's going to take us 2 weeks to get through the whole story and to understand it fully. And there's a lot there's a lot of other aspects to the story that kind of spin off into other stories, which we're going to have to talk about as well. So, all right, let's start by reading it. I was going to ask you what you might know about it already, but let's read first rather than putting people on the spot. Mm-hmm. Let's read a little bit over here. So, Perek Gimel starts. Nebuchadnezzar Malka Avad Flame Didahav. Nebuchadnezzar the king made a golden statue, a statue made out of gold. Rume Amin Shitin. Its height was 60 amos. Pisaye Amin Shis. And its width was 6 amos. Akime Bivikas Dura. He put it up in the valley of Dura, Bimdinas Bavel, in the country of Bavel. Now, before we even go any further, there's a tremendous amount to discuss over here. Let's first get our bearings. How much is 60 amos? So 60 amos is, we don't know exactly how long an amma is, but each amma is a foot and a half. So 60 amos is 90 feet. So a statue that is 90 feet tall, so we're talking about, how much is that? We're talking, 7 stories tall?
Wow.
If you see a story, it's about 12 feet. Yeah. About 7, so around 7 stories tall. Mm-hmm. That's a minimum. That's if that's the smallest measurement of what an amma is.
Yeah.
So imagine this statue, which is taller, picture the Kollel Beis Medrash building. It's taller than that. Taller than that structure, and so it's taller than the sanctuary, the Beth Jacob sanctuary. It's a very tall statue. It's only 6 amos wide. The Gemara says that mathematically that won't work. That a 6 amos wide statue, which is 60 amos tall, 10 times taller than it is wide, that width will not be wide enough to hold up the statue. Mm-hmm. So
wouldn't it be like an obelisk almost?
Well, you'd have to put it into the ground to keep it from falling over.
Okay.
Here it was just straight up.
Okay.
And it wasn't diagonal to hold it up like the Eiffel Tower or something like that. Here it's just straight up.
Hmm.
So the Gemara says that they would put it up and it would fall, and they would put it up again, they would fall again, and therefore they had to keep it up. Now it was made out of pure gold; it was only gold, so they had to get more gold to hold it up. So the Gemara says they took all the gold that they could find that came from Yerushalayim,
mm-hmm.
and they poured it around the bottom of the idol of the statue to hold it in place. So the gold of Yerushalayim was reduced to to holding up this idol. That's that was like a
Bizayin.
Yeah, it was a Bizayin. It was degrading that the gold of Yerushalayim should be used to hold up such a statue.
Why didn't they? Wasn't working. Why didn't they just change the dimensions?
So the that's a good question. Why these dimensions in the first place? Obviously, they must be important if they needed to do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll answer your question by asking a different question, which is, why did Nebuchadnezzar do this? Why did he make this statue of pure gold? We just finished in Perek Beis that Nebuchadnezzar has acknowledged that Hashem is in control, that Daniel is a faithful servant of Hashem. In fact, he's made Daniel himself into a deity, and he is in awe of this of Hashem. Why would he then go and create this statue of pure gold?
Because he wants a reflection of himself and to impress.
Now, why is it a reflection of himself?
Because the reflection of himself would be reflecting onto God, maybe he thinks.
Okay.
And so he would have this reflection, and if Hashem is looking at him and the golden statue together.
Well, Hashem doesn't like statues, right?
Huh?
Hashem doesn't like statues.
No, he doesn't. But I'm talking about from Nebuchadnezzar's point of view.
Yeah.
What his thought processes are. Not what Hashem doesn't like it.
Okay.
But what he thinks that maybe somehow he can say, well, I'm worthy for you.
Okay. Okay. So you want to say it's some way of him expressing his worthiness.
Well, he was already told he was the gold head.
Okay.
So why can't he do the whole gold thing?
Okay. He was the golden head in the previous statue. The statue that he saw in his dream had a golden head, which was him. The rest of the body went down to silver, and then to copper, and then to iron, and then to earthenware, to clay. So they represented different nations after Nebuchadnezzar. And as we said, Daniel told him it's going to represent a change in who controls the world. We're going to go from gold, which is the Babylonians, which is Nebuchadnezzar, to silver, which is the Persians, to copper, which is the Greeks, to iron, which is the Romans. And that's what he told them. Nebuchadnezzar here wants to make a statue of pure gold to show that there will not be any succession. There won't be any change. Just like the head is gold, so is the arms and the shoulders. So is the midsection. So are the legs. The Nebuchadnezzar is replicating what he saw in the dream, but making it pure gold in order to say that, no, it's not going to change. It's going to continue gold, 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 all the way to the end, and it's never going to change. Nebuchadnezzar here is trying to undermine what he saw in the dream, which is why the Malbim explains why he needed it to be 60 amos tall and 6 amos wide, because those were the dimensions of the statue that he saw in his dream. He wanted an exact replica of what he saw in his dream, but only pure gold, not any other material. Yeah.
We had the Heita Egel, and now we have this. Why do we sin with gold statues?
We don't sin. This is him. Mm-hmm. This is Nebuchadnezzar.
Yeah, but people.
Why do people sin with gold? Because gold is precious. But in his case, he was told he was gold.
But he thought he was the most precious. He didn't think of himself as the most soft of them.
Okay.
He thought of himself as the most precious.
Well, it did mean he was very precious.
That's quite an ego.
Daniel told him. Daniel told him that he's the most refined of all of them. You know. Mm-hmm. So, but here he's trying to make the dream come true to a point, meaning that it should represent what's going to happen in the future, but only gold and nothing else. That
you
it's only going to.
You said we should do with dreams. If it's a dream that isn't what you want, then you.
That's exactly what he's trying to do. He's trying to change what the dream was. Now it's already been interpreted by Daniel, so it's difficult to do anything about it. But he wants to do that. Now more than that, he also wants to get everybody else to agree. But there's a more sinister thing going on here besides that. Remember that his dream ended off with a stone destroying, pulverizing the statue. Daniel told him that stone represents Hashem. and Hashem, His kingdom, which is of course manifested by us, is going to come and destroy all the other nations that are in control of the world, and eventually Hashem is going to take over. He didn't want that either. Now Nebuchadnezzar here is following a similar route that Bilam suggested many years earlier. Bilam said that if you want to conquer the Jews, you have to get the Jews to sin. Because if the Jews are not sinning, then they will not be defeated. So Nebuchadnezzar wanted not only to have a representation of the dream, but with a spin that would perpetuate him and his descendants. He also wanted to have something that would cause the Jews to sin, which would be to bow to this idol.
Now right here, it just called it an image. It didn't, in the English translation, it didn't call it an idol.
Well, it's a statue. What is an idol?
Well, an idol, I thought, was representative of a god that they bowed down to.
Well, it could be in any form. Right. I mean, they worship various things. But you're bringing up a good point, which we're going to have to discuss later on, which is, what was this statue? Was it an idol or was it not an idol? What was it exactly? So we'll discuss that presently, hopefully tonight. Pasuk Beis, verse 2. Unubuchadnezzar Malka Shlach Lemichnash. Nebuchadnezzar the king sent together Le'achashtar Penaya. We're going to have a lot of difficult words here. La'achashtar Penaya. Let's count them here. La'achashtar Penaya. That's one. Signaya is two. Fachavasa is three. These are different types of people that he's gathering. Adar Gazraya. That's four. Gidavraya. That's five. Disavraya is six. Tiftoye is seven. So he gathered these seven types of people. V'chol Shiltoni Medinsa. And all rulers of countries. These seven categories represented different types of leadership positions. He wanted to gather representatives from all the nations of the world to bow to this idol. But he couldn't gather all the nations of the world. How are you going to fit all the people of the world into this valley to bow to this idol? That's not practical. So instead he wanted representatives of all the people. So he gathered all of the leadership, which he controlled, of course. He was in charge of the entire world. He had conquered the whole world. So he gathered the leadership of all of these places and gathered them to this valley. Lemese lachanukas salma, to come. You see that word? Lachanukas salma. So we have a Hanukkah reference over here. To the, what does Hanukkah mean?
Dedication.
Dedication or initiation. To the dedication of this statue, the Hakim Nebuchadnezzar Malka, that Nebuchadnezzar the king had established. So he wants to gather all the different leaders of the world as representatives of their nations to come and be there for the dedication of this idol. Beidayan. So then it happened. Miskanshin Achashtar Penaya Signaya. This is Hashem's sense of humor to repeat all this. Adar Gazraya, Gidavraya, Disavraya, Tiftaye, all those different types of leaders. Fachol Shiltoni Medinasa, and all the leaders of all the countries. Lachanukas Salma, the Hakim Nebuchadnezzar Malka, to dedicate this idol, the statue that Nebuchadnezzar had established. Vikamin Lakavel Salma, and they stood in front of this statue the Hakim Nebuchadnezzar that Nebuchadnezzar had established. Now he didn't tell them to bow yet. All he told them was, I want them all gathered here. And they, of course, they all listened, and they gathered around. They came to the area where the statue was. A vast area that could hold many, many, many people, and they all came to this huge valley. Vicharoza Kare Vichoyo. And what's the word for the person?
Here it's pronounced as herald.
The herald, okay, good. So the one who, the one, right, the cruz, what's that?
The town crier.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, but it's not the, here's the king. Right, that's right. So the herald announced, he came out to strongly and announced, he announced the following commandment from the king. L'chon Amrin, to you it is said, Amamaya Umbaya Vibishanaya, nations, countries, and languages, meaning all you people out there, all the people in this valley, this is being said to you. Bi'idana di Sishmun call at the time that you hear the sound of Karna Mashrokisa Kasros Sabcha Pisantrin Sumponya. When you hear the sound of all of these various very loud instruments, I like the word sumponya, reminds me of symphony. So when you hear all of these instruments, the chol zinei zimra, all types of instruments, when you hear those, the first list was specific instruments, and now there's a general phrase for all instruments. So when you hear the sound of the music and the cacophony of music, then tiplun, you should fall, fesis gudun, and you should bow, letzelem dava, to the golden statue, diakem Nebuchadnezzar malka, that Nebuchadnezzar the king has established. So that's the sign. When you hear that sign, when you hear that sound, everybody is to bow. And of course, the follow-up is, umadi lo yipel v'yiskud, anybody who does not fall and bow, ba shasa, in that time, yisremei, he will be thrown, lego atunura yakidta, to the pit of the large fire. There was a pit that they would stoke a gigantic fire in, this pit, and it's not, when I say furnace, I always used to picture as a kid, you know, one of these like iron furnaces. It wasn't an iron furnace, it was a pit in the ground. It was a large pit in the ground that they had put all kinds of fuel in and made a massive fire. And someone who does not bow will get thrown into that fire. So, of course, kol kavel dina. And as this happened, Bay Zimna, at that time, Kidi Shaman Kolamamaya, when all the nations heard, Kolkarna Mashrokisa Kasos Samcha Pisanterin Vakolznezmara, when they heard all of these various instruments, Nafran Kol Amamaya Umaya Vilishanaya, all of the various nations fell. Sogdim et selam dava, they bowed to the golden statue, the Hakim Nebuchadnezzar Malka, that Nebuchadnezzar the king had established. So, this is what he wants to happen, and this is what's happening. He's got it set up, that all the leaders are there, and as the music sounds, they all bow. So, clearly he wanted it to be something which happened simultaneously. He was not interested in people just coming by and bowing as they went by. He wanted a mass showing of everybody bowing at the same time. So he did it with a symbol that as soon as the music sounds, everybody on their faces, get down on the ground. He wanted it to be a sudden thing where you would see these thousands of people in the valley who were all very they were the aristocrats of where they came from, that everybody who was anybody in the world, as soon as that music sounded, they all went down as one and bowed to this statue. The statue was located in Bikas Dura, the Valley of Dura. The Valley of Dura was a place where Nebuchadnezzar had done a terrible act, an infamous act, several years earlier. The Valley of Dura was a place where, after the Jewish people were taken into exile, those of you who were here for Yechezkel will remember this story, that after they were taken into exile, there were Jews, there were Jewish men who were exceedingly handsome. They weren't handsome in the physical sense, it was that they were very spiritual people, and the spiritual aspect of them, it glowed, it shone through, and therefore they were very beautiful people to look at. When they came to Babel, they were dragged to Babylonia, they were seen by the women of Babel, and the women of Babel told their husbands how beautiful these men were of the Jews. So the men complained to Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar had all these men killed. He had them executed. And he had them executed in Bikas Dura, in this valley. But they were such beautiful people that even after they were killed, the Gemara says, the women were still taken by their looks. And again, they told their husbands, and the husbands told Nebuchadnezzar. So Nebuchadnezzar commanded, and he had their bodies trampled and mutilated in order to destroy their beauty. This all happened in the Valley of Dura. It is in this same valley that Nebuchadnezzar establishes this statue. In the same valley. It was a way also of rubbing it in. Of saying that this God of the Jews is not going to take away my kingdom. Just as I destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, and I destroyed the beauty of the people, which was really a spiritual beauty, I'm also going to maintain my melucha, my reign, my kingdom. It's not going to be lost. That's one of the symbols that he's trying to do. Now there's another historical note about the Valley of Dura. And again, those of you who are in the Yecheskel class might remember what else happened in the Valley of Dura. And in fact, it happened at the same time that the next story is going to happen.
All the bodies that
fell
down.
I'll be more specific. She said the bones that flowed down.
The bones that flowed down to like one spot.
And then they all got back together.
Okay.
People came back together.
What's that?
Got back together. But isn't Daniel and the lion's den also in this valley?
That's much later. We'll get to that later. That's not
the same valley, right?
I don't think it's the same valley. I don't think so. Could be, but I don't think so. We'll see later. Haven't prepared that yet. We'll see later. What, who said something else?
The dry bones.
The dry bones, that's correct. The dry bones takes place in Bikas Dura. The bones that Nebuchadnezzar, that Yechezkel brings back to life takes place in the same valley and at the same time as this story. And we will show, when we learned it in Yechezkel, we talked about this story at that time, and now we will talk about it as well. But first we have to get through our story here. But this is a very important place, and there are a lot of things that are going to happen here simultaneously, as we will see.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
In the comments here, it also says that that's where the Tower of Babel was built.
That's what others want to say as well, that this was the place of the Tower of Babel, also was in this Valley of Dura. It says in the pasuk in Chumash, "Vayimtzu bika," they found the valley. So some want to say it's also the same place as where the Migdal Bavel was.
So what is so popular about it?
Yeah, right. It's a popular place.
Everybody seems to.
Yeah, they seem to gravitate there.
I think they say that certain lands have certain holiness and certain ones have tumah. So this would be like a land that keeps having tumah.
Well, or it has there's a propensity towards a certain thing in that place.
Isn't that near Baghdad?
Mm-hmm. That's what this says somewhere in here.
Okay. Now, when this happened, Pasuk Ches, verse 8, Kol Kovel Dina, as this was happening, Beizim at that time, Krivu Guvin Kasdain, there were some Babylonian people. They came. Va'achalu Kartsehon di Yehudoye, and they told Lashon Hara about the Jews. There were some people in the Babylonian government who felt that this was a good opportunity to get the Jews. This would be a good opportunity to get rid of those Jews who were usurping their positions, as we've already learned that Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah managed to reach very high places in government. And now those who were jealous of them saw an opportunity here. So what do they do? Anu v'amrin, they called out and they said, L'Nebuchadnezzar Malka, to Nebuchadnezzar the king. Malka la'olmen chayi, the king should live forever. That's a good way to start off when you want to talk to Nebuchadnezzar. Ant Malka, you the king, samta te'im, you gave a commandment, dichol enosh, that any man, Diyishma kol karna, that will hear the sound of karna mashrokisa kasros Sabcha, Pisanterin, Vesiponia, Vechosne Zimara, that will any of these different instruments. Yipel v'yiskud letzalam da'ava, you should fall and bow to the golden statue. Umadi lo yipel v'yiskud, whoever does not fall and bow, Yisramei lego atun nura yakidita, will be thrown into the pit of this massive fire. Isai guvin Yehuda'in, there are these Jewish people. Dimaniso yason al avidas midinas baval, you appointed them over the various cabinet posts for Bavel. Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. The three people, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, who were called Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Guvraya Ilech, these people, Lo Samu Alach Malka Te'em. They did not put upon themselves the king's command. Le'lahach, Lafolkin, to your God they don't bow. Uletzelem Daba dihakimta la sagdin, and to the golden statue that you established they do not bow. They're speaking Lashon Hara, they're saying that Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah are not willing to bow to your statue. Now I'll point out to you, and we'll discuss a little bit further in a moment, but I'll point out to you that they said two things. They won't bow to your, they won't serve your God, and they won't bow to your statue. What does that imply about the statue?
It's an idol.
They won't bow to your God, they won't serve your God, and they won't bow to your statue.
The statue is not a God.
Okay, and the implication is that the statue is not God. Because it's two things. They won't serve your God, and they won't bow to your statue. This is an important observation, as we'll see. Beidayin Nebuchadnezzar Birgaz Vachama. Then Nebuchadnezzar, with great anger, he was fuming. Amar Lahaisaya Meshadrach Meshach Abednego. He said to bring Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Beidayin, and then Guvraya Ilech, these men Heisayu Kadamalka, were brought before the king. Ane Nebuchadnezzar Ve'amar Lahon. Nebuchadnezzar the king called out and said to them, Hatzdah. Hatzdah means is it worthless? How do they translate it there?
Is it true?
Rashi says it more as a negative. Is it worthless? Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Is it worthless what I said? Leilahi la esechon folchin, that you won't bow to him, you won't serve my God. Uletzelam davad hakemes lo sagdin, and you won't bow to my statue that I established, my golden statue that I put up. Kaan hein esechon asidin. It will be now that you will. He's commanding them that you will. Dividana di Sishmun kol karna mashokisa kasar sabcha pisag teirin v'sumponia v'chosne izmara, that when you hear the sound of any of these instruments and all the instruments together, when you it will be now that when you hear all these instruments, tiplun v'siskidun, you will fall and you will bow with some of the avdes to the statue that I made. That he lost this kidun, if you don't bow, ba shasa tisramun lego atun nura, at that moment you will be thrown into the huge fire yakidita, which is burning in the ground. Uman hu elakon, what kind of God is there? Di yeshes vinchon min yadoi, who will save you from my hands. This was a challenge. Nebuchadnezzar is worked up. He's fuming. He's angry, and he's letting out steam, and he's saying, is this true what I hear, that you haven't bowed to my statue? I'm telling you right now, the next time that music starts, you will bow. And if you do not bow, you're going straight into that fire. And what kind of God is going to save you from me? That was a clear challenge, and clearly a statement, an arrogant statement, against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, against Hashem. Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were not about to stand for a statement like that against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ano Shadrach Meshach V'Abednego. So Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah called out, Va'amrin l'malka, and they said to the king. They said to the king, Nebuchadnezzar. Now, it doesn't say Nebuchadnezzar the king. They just said Nebuchadnezzar. La chashkin anachna. We are not, we don't care. We're not afraid. We're not impressed. Al dina piskam lahasavusach. On this thing to answer you. Meaning, we're not worried about this thing to answer you. Which means, as Rashi explains, we don't need to go ask any advice about how to answer you. We know what to answer you. We don't need to go ask and seek any counsel from our rabbeim and go find out from our mentors what we should say in this case. We have a very easy answer here. They called him Nebuchadnezzar, which was they said it derogatorily, and as they were saying, as far as we're concerned, if you're going to talk to us like that, you're nothing. You're not a king in our eyes. We're not afraid of you, and we're not taking any commands from you. Hein Isai Elakana di Anachna Falchin. There is our God that we worship. Yachil Leshezavusana. He is able to save us. Mina Tunura Yakirita from your burning furnace, or your burning fire. Umin Yadach Malka Yeshezib, and from you the king he will save. We have a God who can save us if he wants to. Vahein La. And if not, if he doesn't want to save us, Yedia Lehevelach Malka, it should be known to you, the king, Dilelahach Las Yisana Falchin, that to your God we will not worship. Uletzelem Dava Tihakimta La Nisgud, and to your golden statue we will not bow. So they said back to Nebuchadnezzar, we are not going to bow. We don't care. First of all, we do have a God who can save us if he chooses. Your fire is nothing, and you are nothing as far as our God is concerned. But even if he doesn't want to save us, we don't care. We're not bowing, we're not worshiping your God, and we're not bowing to your statue. Finished. End of story, period. That's their answer. Now, Nebuchadnezzar, as you might imagine, does not react very nicely to this challenge. So, Beidayin, and then Nebuchadnezzar, Hismeli Chema. He was filled with rage. Utzleim Anpohi Ishtani. And the hue of his face changed. He became all red in the face. Asha Drach Meshach Vavenego against Chanan Mishav Azariah. Anei Ve'omar, he called out and he said, Lemeze La'atuna, to stoke up the fire, Chad Shiva Avichazei Lemezeh. 7 times more than it had been before. It was already a raging inferno, and he wanted it to be stoked to the point where it would be 7 times greater. Now we're talking about a massive fire in the ground that you couldn't get close to it. There was a chatzer, there was a courtyard, that there was a fence around the courtyard keeping people out, and then in the courtyard there was a huge pit in the ground which had this massive fire billowing out of it, out of this hole in the ground. And he wants it to be raised 7 times its flame. Uleguvrin gibarechayo dive chaylei, and to his most powerful soldiers that were in his army, Amar, he said, lechapasa, to tie up, leshadrach meshach v'avenego, to chana meshach v'azarya, lemirva la tunura yakidita, to throw them into the flames. The Chazal explained that Hanan, Mishael, and Azariah did not appear to be powerful people. They were, first of all, young, and they weren't especially strong or powerful people. But when they answered Nebuchadnezzar with such strength and such courage, and without flinching, Nebuchadnezzar said to himself, I better watch out. They may be more powerful than they appear. And therefore, he called his most powerful soldiers to come and tie them up and throw them into the fire.
Where's Daniel?
That's a great question. The Gemara asks that question. Where's Daniel? Gemara asks the question. Where was he?
Right.
Okay. Great question. We're gonna answer that question. Very good. They die in, and then Guvraya Ilech. These people Kfisu Bisar Balehon. They were tied up in there. Now, Sabalehon and Patshehon, and the next few words, V'char blas hon ulevushay hon refer to different garments that they were wearing. They are references to princely garments. They were, of course, aristocrats themselves, so they were wearing the fine garments that you would expect them to wear. They were tied up with their garments. In other words, they took off, let's say they were wearing a silk sash or something like that. That was taken in, they were tied up with that sash that they were wearing. Uremiu lagatu nura yakidita, and they were thrown into the billowing furnace. Now, it's important to know what they were tied up with. You would think this is a detail which we don't really need to know. What difference does it make what they were tied up with? So Chazal tell us, our sages tell us, that the reason why we need to know what they were tied up with is because you see they were wearing their princely garments. Even though when they were called before the king, they knew they were being called on the carpet. They knew why the king was calling them. They weren't being called, they weren't being given an audience to the king because of how wonderful they were and the king wanted to give them a medal of honor. They knew when they were dragged before the king in the first place that they were going to be accused of something. They did know what the accusation was. I'll tell you why in a minute. But they knew what the accusation was going to be, and they knew that Nebuchadnezzar was angry with them. They could have worn clothing that was less gaudy. They could have worn just plain clothing and gone before the king like this, and begged for mercy. But instead, they went with their garments as they were and came before the king standing with the posture and with the courage and the authority that they knew they really had. The Gemara says from here that if a person is going to be is going to be attacked or is going to be in this kind of situation called on the carpet by the non-Jews, that they should not give up their position, meaning they should go before the tribunal dressed as they would in their position. If they have a position of authority, they should go before the tribunal in that wearing the garments of that position. They shouldn't go with pretending to be less than they are. Why? Because if they show courage and show that they're not going to flinch in the face of what they're being threatened with, then perhaps it will show them, it'll show the tribunal that they don't deserve what they're getting. That they should not go and cower before them. Now, the Gemara doesn't mean to say that you shouldn't beg for mercy. If a person is going to be killed, they can beg for mercy. But in this situation, Hanan, Mishael, and Azariah were standing up for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They were standing up for Hashem. It wasn't themselves at stake over here. This was Nebuchadnezzar trying to undermine the message of Hashem. Hanan, Mishael, and Azariah weren't about to just let that go. They represented HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they went before the king in the appearance of people who are the representatives of Hashem.
People to be reckoned with.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
But it also shows respect. I mean, we know that we're supposed to wear best clothes when we're with our parents and stuff like that. So part of it might have been to try to calm him by showing him that they still respected him until he spoke, and then they didn't even call him back.
Okay, that could be as well. And we will see later that they still respected him even later. They showed respect even after they got thrown into the fire, as we'll see later, which is a good point as well. Now, as we're at the pivotal point here, of course, that they're not going to get burned up. But before we read that, the Gemara tells us that Hanan, Mishael, and Azariah, before they were taken before the king, they knew what was going to happen. They went to seek counsel of what to do. And they went to Yechezkel. And they asked Yechezkel, what should we do? They said, if we decide to not bow, will we be saved or not? And Yechezkel told them, I don't know whether you will or won't. And after they left Yechezkel, then Hashem told Yechezkel, they will be saved. If they don't bow, and they get thrown in the fire, they won't die. But Yechezkel was not told this before. Why? Because had they known that they wouldn't be killed, then their act would not have been as great as it was. They were willing to not bow, knowing that they may be killed. When they said to Nebuchadnezzar, our God can save us if he wants to, but even if he doesn't want to, we're not bowing. They meant it. They were giving up their lives for Hashem. They were not doing this knowing they were going to be saved. They went to seek counsel beforehand. They were told it's not clear. And nevertheless, they were willing to let themselves be killed.
Mm-hmm.
And Hashem didn't want to take away that schar, that reward. What they did was an incredible act of self-sacrifice for the honor of Hashem. And that could only be if they didn't know they'd be saved. And this, the Gemara tells us, that if any time a person is wants to sanctify Hashem's name, a person has to know that they might get killed. A person has to know that they're doing this, even if it means their lives. Now, if Hashem chooses to save the person, Hashem chooses to save the person. That's up to Hashem. But from the person's perspective, it has to be al menas leharig, on condition to be killed. They're willing to do it even if it means their lives. The Gemara tells us that Hanan, Mishael, and Azariah, where did they learn to do this? How did they know to give up their lives? The Gemara says they learned it from
Abraham.
Not from Abraham. Good guess.
No,
no, not from Daniel. But it has to do with Pesach.
No.
From the frogs.
Oh, yeah.
The Gemara says they learned it from the frogs. Why the frogs?
They went into ovens or wherever.
Because the Torah itself tells us they jumped into the ovens.
Mm-hmm.
The frogs, in order to carry out the plague against the Egyptians, even jumped into fire. They jumped into the ovens and got baked into the food.
Mm.
They were willing to kill themselves in order to make the plague happen. Now the frogs, what does that mean? The frogs don't have free will. They're not people. They're not making choices. They're being told what to do. But Hanan, Mishael, and Azariah learned from the frogs that you see that sometimes it is important for a life to be lost in order to sanctify God's name. That's what they learned from the frogs. And that's why they were willing to do it. Which brings us back to the question of, is this an idol or not? You see, the Tosfos in the Gemara asks the question that the Gemara says, when the Gemara is discussing the concept of a person's life being threatened, the Gemara is discussing the relative challenge in a person who is threatened with execution and a person who's threatened with lashes or a beating or other types of torture. And the Gemara says that even though you would think, even though death, of course, is a terrible thing, who wants to die? But in some ways, the threat of death is easier to handle than the threat of pain.
Mm-hmm.
And the Gemara says a fascinating thing, Ilu nagdua l'chananya mishal v'azaria, had they beaten Hanan, Mishael, and Azariah, they would have bowed to the statue. The reason why they were able not to bow to the statue is because the consequence was death. Death they were willing to take. But torture, they would not have been able to take and they would have bowed. Now, Tosfos asks the question, what do you mean torture they wouldn't have been able to take? I understand, most people can't take torture. But we're talking about Hanan, Mishael, and Azariah. I mean, we have examples of people who were later than Hanan, Mishael, and Azariah, who were tortured terribly and didn't give up their Judaism. Think of Rabbi Akiva, where they killed him by raking his skin with iron combs.
Hot iron.
And what about Rav Chanina ben Tradyon, who was burned, but when he was burned, they put sponges around him so that the fire wouldn't kill him quickly. I mean, we have examples, all kinds of examples of people who could have chosen otherwise, and they were willing to endure tremendous pain and not to give up. So Hanan Mishav Azaya, the Tosfos says, how does the Gemara know that they wouldn't have been able to handle the torture? Who says? I mean, all we know about Hanan Mishav Azaya is that they passed this test. So maybe they would have passed a more difficult test. Who says it had to be death for them to pass it? So Tosfos answers that the reason, the Gemara is not saying they couldn't have taken it. The Gemara is saying they wouldn't have gone through it because it wasn't really necessary. Because this was not Avodah Zarah. This was not idolatry. This statue was not an idol. That's why you said it was an image. But it was not an idol. The Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zarah and in other places, in discussing the Avera of bowing to an idol, the Gemara says there are idols and there are idols. There are statues and there are statues. There are statues that are idols, that are in Avodah Zarah. It's something that the non-Jews worship, that it is prohibited to bow down to. And even at the threat of death or torture, one is not allowed to bow to an idol. But then there are statues that are not idols. There are statues that are put up l'chvod hamalchus, for the honor of the king. It's some sort of image that the king likes, and by bowing to this idol, to this statue, it's like you're bowing to the king. Are you allowed to bow to a king?
Yes.
You are. There's nothing wrong with bowing to a king. You're allowed to bow to a king. You're allowed to bow to a person in honor, as opposed to worship. Of course, you can't worship a person, but you're allowed to bow to a person as an honor to that person. It is permitted to do that. Now, we don't do it. It's a strange thing to do today.
Karate,
you know,
they do it.
What's that?
The karate, they do it.
So my father is a black belt in karate. When he first started taking karate, he first looked into a Japanese. He's a black belt in Korean karate, in Taekwondo. But when he first started taking karate, he went to a Japanese type of karate. And he left it. He stayed only for a little bit and he left. And the reason why he left is because they did a lot of bowing. He didn't like the bowing. He sort of just felt like it wasn't just constantly bowing. He didn't like the whole thing.
This was like an idol because this was not alive.
Okay. So, the Gemara says that if the purpose of the statue is only to honor the king, then it's not an idol. It wasn't something they worshipped. They didn't think it was a god. The king just said, you bow to this idol, it's like you're bowing to me. This idol represents me, and you are paying homage to me by bowing to this statue. But it's not an idol. It is technically permitted to bow in that case. So then why did Hanan, Mishael, and Azariah let themselves be killed? What Tosfos is saying is, if the threat would have been torture, they would have bowed, because it was permitted to bow. It was permitted to bow. But because it was only death, that's why they were willing to be killed. But then the question is, why be killed? If you're allowed to bow, then why be killed?
Why didn't they bow?
Okay.
It was okay.
Okay, so now, listen very carefully here to this discussion. This is a very important discussion to be aware of. We know that there are three mitzvos for which we have to give up our lives. We know that if a non-Jew puts a gun to a Jew's head and says, eat this pork or I will shoot, then we eat the pork and we don't get killed. But if a non-Jew puts a gun to a Jew's head and says one of three things, either he says, bow to this idol, or he says to commit an act of immoral relationships, whether it's adultery or it's incest or something of that nature, or the third, that's the second type of sin, and the third sin is murder. It says either you kill that Jew or I will kill you. Those three cases, we are obligated to be killed and not kill, and not commit those three sins. But all other sins, all other averos, there the halacha is that we ya'avar v'aliyei harig, do the avera and don't be killed. That's what the Gemara says. Is a Jew allowed to give up their lives for other mitzvos? The non-Jew puts a gun to the Jew's head and says, eat this pork or I will shoot. So the halacha is he's certainly allowed to eat the pork. Is he allowed to be killed? If he'd rather not eat the pork, is he allowed to be killed and say, I don't want to eat the pork, shoot me, I'm not eating the pork? So, before I answer that question, let me explain that there is something else going on as well which we have to be aware of. This rule, which we always quote, that you only give up your life for three mitzvos, but not anything else, that's only true when there's no chilul Hashem involved. There's no desecration of God's name. But if there's a desecration of God's name, we have to give up our lives for anything. Anything. What would be an example of a desecration of God's name?
The wrong shoelace.
I'll give that example in a moment. What's an example? What does it mean to desecrate God's name? There are two ways one could desecrate God's name. Either if this threat is being done publicly, which means in front of a minion, 10 adult male Jews. It's a discussion whether females would count in this case as well, because it's not for davening, this is for Kiddush Hashem. So, but certainly 10 adult male Jews, possibly females as well, that if a non-Jew puts a gun to the Jew's head and says, eat this pork or I will shoot, he's obligated to be shot and not eat the pork, because it's in public. Because if you eat the pork, it is a chilul Hashem, it is a desecration of God's name. Or, if the reason why he wants him to eat the pork is to get him to do an Avera. If the purpose over here is, I want you to violate your Torah, or I will shoot you, then a person has to be shot, even for the most minor thing. Even, as the Gemara says, if it was the custom of the non-Jews to wear one color shoelace, and the custom of the Jews to wear a different color shoelace, and the non-Jew puts the gun to the Jew's head and says, wear the non-Jewish type of shoelace, because I don't want you people be acting like Jews, he has to be killed even for the shoelace. Because that's a desecration of God's name. Anytime the threat is to get Jews not to be Jewish, then a person has to give up their life even for the most minor thing. Or, if it's a public matter, they have to give up their life for the most minor thing. But if it is not a public matter, and it is not to get the Jews to violate their Judaism, and it's not one of those three cardinal sins, then a person should do the Avera and not be killed. Now the question is, but is he allowed to be killed? This is a difference of opinion amongst the poskim, the various authorities. Some say a Jew must eat the pork and not be killed. Others say no, that if he wants to be killed and not eat the pork, he's permitted. That's a discussion amongst the various commentaries. However, everybody agrees that if in being killed you would sanctify God's name, then even though one is not required to be killed, one could. If the situation is such where, if he would agree to do what the non-Jew wants him to do, there would not be a desecration of God's name. And it wouldn't be one of the three terrible sins. And it's not in public, and he's not trying to get him not to be a Jew. It's just whatever it is, it's just happening. That would be permitted to not be killed and do whatever the non-Jew is telling him to do. But if in defying the non-Jew, there will be a Kiddush Hashem, there will be a sanctification of God's name, then it is permitted to give up one's life. That's the situation over here. Over here, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were faced with a situation where if they chose to bow, it would not be a sin. It was not worshipping an idol. They weren't being told to do it because they're Jewish. All the nations were doing it, not just the Jews. Everybody was doing it. It wasn't because you're Jewish, we want you not to be Jewish. It was everybody. And it wasn't they weren't being told to do a sin. They were just being told to bow to this statue, which is permitted to be done. So they technically could have bowed. And therefore, if the threat would have been torture, they would have bowed, because it was permitted. However, they realized that if they wouldn't bow, there would be a tremendous Kiddush Hashem, an unbelievable sanctification of God's name. Because they would be telling Nebuchadnezzar that you can't tell us what to do, Hashem tells us what to do. You don't control the world, Hashem controls the world. You can't undermine that dream that you had. Hashem gave you the dream, Daniel interpreted the dream, and it's going to happen no matter what. They understood that they could sanctify Hashem's name. That's why they asked Yechezkel, if they'd be saved, Yechezkel said it's not known. And that's why they decided we're going to do it even if it means being killed, because if we are killed, it will still sanctify God's name. And that's why they were willing to do it. But had they bowed, it would not have been a problem. That's the situation over here. Yeah.
So with Mordechai, when he wouldn't bow to Haman because Haman was wearing an idol around him, everybody was bowing to Haman. It wasn't just that. A lot of them were doing it out of respect to Haman. They didn't even know he had that idol or whatever it was. So, like, I don't get in that case by him not bowing. He didn't just put his life in danger. He put all the Jews' lives in danger.
Right.
Isn't that a different category?
So it depends over there. There's a difference of opinion what happened over there. Had there not been an idol around Haman's neck, then the bowing to Haman would have been permitted, and Mordechai defying it would have been Mordechai's way of sanctifying Hashem's name. And you'd have to say that he didn't expect to put everybody in danger. If there was an idol around his neck, it's a difference of opinion whether it was or wasn't. If there was an idol around his neck, then it was prohibited for anyone to bow to Haman, unless that idol was similar to this. It wasn't really an Avodah Zarah. It was just a way of showing paying honor to Haman. But if it was actually an Avodah Zarah, if it actually was an idolatry, then no one was allowed to bow. And Mordechai was just doing what everybody should have done. So it's not clear. There's a very big discussion about Mordechai, about what happened over there. It's not a simple matter at all. Where was Daniel? Where was Daniel? And we don't have. I don't know, is my watch? What time do you? My watch has been slow. I don't know.
Two minutes.
Okay. Where was Daniel? So the Gemara says Daniel was sent away. He wasn't there. So the Gemara says, Shlosha hayu ba'osa etza. There were three who made that decision for Daniel to not be there. Daniel was sent on a mission somewhere to do something. The Gemara has various ideas of where he was. All of them are cryptic and hard to understand. But he was for sure not there. Where was he? He was going, he was on a mission. Why was he on a mission? There were three who wanted him not to be there. Who were the three? Hashem, Daniel, and Nebuchadnezzar. All three didn't want Daniel to be there. Hashem didn't want Daniel to be there because had Daniel been there and been thrown into the fire with Hanan, Mishael, and Azariah and been saved, everybody would have said
it was in the merit of
Daniel. And he didn't. Hashem wanted Hanan, Mishael, and Azariah to have the chance to have it be in their merit. And therefore, don't let Daniel be there. Because for sure, he would have been saved too. And since he was greater than they, people would have said, it was because of him. So send them away from here, and that way it will be clear it's because of Hanan, Mishael, and Azariah. That's Hashem's reasoning. Daniel didn't want to be there, because since Nebuchadnezzar had turned Daniel himself into a deity, he was afraid. What does it say that you do to Avodah Zarah? What do you do with idolatry, with the actual idols? You destroy them. In fact, it says, "Pesilei Eloheihem," the idols of their gods. What do you do with them? Tisrefun ba'esh, burn them in fire. Daniel said to himself, "If he's bowing to me, and there's a big fire over here, God forbid, maybe I'm going to be thrown into the fire and destroyed because I am their idol." So he didn't want that to happen.
If he had made it through, wouldn't he have seemed even more of a deity?
Okay, okay.
They would have worshipped him even more?
I don't know.
I don't understand what you just said. He was looking at him as he was idol?
Well, remember that at the end of the last chapter, Nebuchadnezzar bowed to Daniel and wanted to sacrifice to him.
Oh, okay.
So Daniel felt that he's treating me as his own idol. Then maybe he'll throw me into the fire because that's what you're supposed to do with idols.
Okay, right.
And Nebuchadnezzar didn't want him to be there because Nebuchadnezzar didn't want to have to burn his own idol. Because he knew that Daniel wouldn't bow to the statue. So he knew that if he's going to put Daniel to the test, Daniel's not going to bow. And then I'm going to have to throw my own God into the fire. So he didn't want to do that. So all three didn't want Daniel there. So that's why Daniel wasn't here. But, and we'll have to talk about this next time, when we actually talk about them being thrown into the fire and what happens, Yechezkel was at work. He was around bringing those bones back to life. And that is a simultaneous event to what we're about to read in Pasuk Chaf Beis in verse 22, with him being thrown into the fire and living through it. So that we still have to talk about. And there's another Another story also, which we have to discuss about Yeshua Kohen Gadol, which also is relevant to this.